Have yours, Alan Nathan. As I mentioned, we have assisting me in the Opining Department, a friend of the show, one of my regulars for this part of the day and this part of the week, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. radio host on the radio's WPFW. You can learn more about Mark by going to marklevineradio.com. Again, marklevineradio.com. That's L-E-V-I-N-E. Mark, good to have you back. How you doing
good,
today?
Good to be here, Alan.
Not a good day for two folks, Eric Holder and former New Jersey Governor Corzine. I'll get to Corzine a little bit, but what was your response or your reaction to the way Eric Holder comported himself? Is he in a bit of trouble or not? What say you, Mark Levine?
Well, I admit I was more transfixed by the Corzine hearings, which I watched today, than the Holder hearings. But all he's really saying is that when they first investigated this, they didn't get all the facts, so they withdrew a letter. That happens all the time in government, so I don't think Holder... I mean, Holder's in a very different position from Corzine. I mean, Corzine's facing criminal liability for his personal acts. Holder's basically, you know, somebody who is overseeing someone who's overseeing someone who did a bad thing. So I don't think it's... But, I mean, he answered the question correctly. Certainly, there's no evidence that Holder intentionally lied to Congress, and Republicans, no one's even asserting there's any evidence of that. So I thought the question was a little out of hand.
You think it was out of hand? Okay.
Yeah.
The reason
to suggest that he intentionally lied to Congress, I think that's out of hand. I mean, when President Bush's people intentionally lied to Congress, Bush didn't even allow them to testify. You may recall that when you had Harriet Myers and Gonzalez, the Attorney General, when they intentionally lied and tried to break the law, they refused to even show up. In fact, so much so they were held in contempt. I respect the fact that Eric Holder is willing to show up.
Well, there was a difference there because you're not allowed to violate the separation of powers, and that was all about the state district attorneys or whatever, or the state attorneys. Well, what is it again? The
U.S. attorneys.
These were about federal lawyers. Right, federal attorneys. Now, the reality is the people were being investigated because it was felt by the leading Democrats that certain laws were violated in dismissing them. What people forget is that those folks serve, people forget that those folks serve at the pleasure of the president. And the president can actually fire them if they have bad breath. He doesn't need anything that the Democrats or opposition finds worthy of approval before he can go ahead and sack their sorry asses.
Well,
I mean, Clinton let go a tonnage of them all at once. Nobody said boo. Bush did the same thing, but not as much. I'm surprised that people are so quick to advertise their ignorance about the Constitution. You don't have a say, just like I don't have it. None of us have a say in who Obama wishes to have serve at his pleasure once they're already doing it. These folks serve at their pleasure. It's their choice. And if they find their behavior is not to their liking, for whatever reason, they can get fired. So, but that's another thing. I want to go on now with Corzine. Now, Corzine...
Well, I just want to make clear. Alberto Gonzalez was attorney general under Bush. Eric Holder is attorney general under Obama. Both are appointed by the president, confirmed by the Senate. And you're right, both can be fired by the president. The difference between the two is that Eric Holder obeys the congressional subpoena, and Alberto Gonzalez thought he was above the law, and apparently so did his president. I respect the fact that Holder was willing to obey a subpoena, whereas Gonzalez...
There was no separation of powers issues as it relates to Holder, but there were separation of powers issues as it relates to the case you just brought up. Therein lies the disparity. Otherwise, you're left with the epitomizing of apple-orange comparison. Look, as I've mentioned before, the only legitimate measure of any of relevant points in a debate or dialogue is the one born out of the original rub first exposing the conflict. Otherwise, any argument can be expanded into a multitude of other arguments, essentially allowing somebody to escape from their half of the original rub. And why? Because they couldn't defend it. And that's where the Democrats were at the time. They couldn't defend it. No matter what it is, they try to occupy themselves with the nucleic foundational justification for Bush ensuring that none of his people had to go to Congress to testify, with that it had to do with appointments that were filled by people who serve at the pleasure of the president. On this occasion, the actions by Eric Holder are not protected by separated powers. None whatsoever. This is an area in which the Congress does have a legitimate oversight. Now, I'm looking at the time, and I really want to go to Corzine. Will you let me do that?
We go to Corzine. The clear is they were both attorney generals overseeing the Justice Department. They're exactly identical, and Congress has oversight in both places. And so I think Gonzalez should have testified, too. But we can go on to Corzine.
Well, similarities do not dissimilarities erase. We're going to get into this in some greater depth upon a return with whom? Mark Levine, a former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. host. Stick with us, folks. Lots of fun around the corner. You are with Battleline, Main Street Radio Network. I'm Nathan. Focusing on Mr. Corzine, he has, of course, been absolutely at the center of so much attention surrounding this latest incredible mishap, MF Global. Going south, the eighth largest bankruptcy in United States history. Amazing, absolutely amazing. We have a system in the Opani. One of my regulars, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. radio host on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. Mark, good to have you back.
Good to be here.
As I was teasing beforehand, I was mentioning that here you have, in the form of John Corzine, again, a former Jersey senator, former governor. Then he becomes CEO of MF Global. Most unfortunate lettering for that company, given all the to which it's about to be subjected, but we'll get into that on another show. But anyway, CEO of MF Global. And then he tells Congress today, Mark, that he doesn't know what happened to the $1.2 billion that once belonged to the personal accounts of his customers. Now, given that Vice President Biden repeatedly stated that John Corzine was the first one that President Obama and he prevailed upon for guidance on the damaged U.S. economy, how will the don't know anything defense fly? How do you see it?
Well, I think his defense is very similar to a lot of Wall Street execs. And frankly, it's very similar to Rupert Murdoch of Fox when asked about the hacking scandal. The problem with CEOs today is they often don't know what's going on. Now, obviously, if we find out, and Corzine's emails and all his stuff has been taken, he has no documents, he has to do this totally from memory, the trustee has basically confiscated everything he owns. If we find out that he did know about it, then Corzine's in big trouble. He could really go to jail. If he didn't know about it and he had some underling who did it, and frankly, I think that's likely given the fact that Corzine did not take the Fifth Amendment today and came very forthright before the committee and said, you know, I really don't know. I can't examine. I have no access to my documents. Then that underling is clearly going to go to jail. I suspect it's going to be the latter, but time will tell.
Yeah, but you know, under Sarbanes-Oxley, CEOs are now liable for what their money handlers do. So the old CEO excuse of not being aware.
I think he's civilly liable. I don't think he's criminally liable, but I do think he's civilly liable, and I think that's a very good law. I actually was in Congress.
I agree. I agree with you. I don't think he's going to be criminally liable, or, well, I guess we don't technically know. I mean, if he did anything with hands-on knowledge, then he becomes criminally liable. But if, in fact, it's just an underling, years ago, that would have been enough for him to not only avoid criminal scrutiny, but also civil scrutiny. These days, however, because of Sarbanes-Oxley, that option of escape is no longer available, or at least it's less so. Would you agree?
Well, I'm a big fan of Sarbanes-Oxley, as I said. It actually was passed over Republican when I was working in Congress, so I know the bill pretty well. It does allow the chief financial officer to sign
off. There were plenty of Republicans who supported that. I got to disabuse you of that and correct it for the record. Bush liked it. He signed it. He got behind it.
There were plenty of Republicans. We had a lot of pressure on them to do that. I remember because this was something that Republicans have been fighting against. And then after Wall Street took a tank, we forced it through. And I'm very glad we did. I think there were four Republicans who supported it and all the Democrats. And I'm thankful for those four that did. But most Republicans were against the bill. And yet it was a very good one because I think you could agree with me that Wall Street execs should be held accountable for what they're...
Well, they should be. I always want them held accountable. I want them held accountable so much they feel the blood rush to their head when they do wrong. I'm all for that. I'm just against the wealthy being used as a shield to protect the government from what it should always be accountable, and that is how it spends money. I always like to point out that the success of the wealthy or even the actions of the wealthy in general do not governments over. There's no linking causation between the two. I've always thought that the success of the wealthy are about as relevant to government overspending as Ukrainians are to bad breath in Nebraska. It's just there's just no linking causation between the two, yet we still have class warfare played by the hardcore left as if there were a linkage between the two, and it's not. By the way, for those who aren't familiar, Sarbanes-Oxley law was an earlier financial overhaul during the Bush administration that, guess what, among other things, separated accountants who audit from those who consult and provided a bunch of other financial regulations meant to better curtail corporate corruption. I got to tell you, Mark, at least in that area, I'm in complete agreement with you. You should not have accounting firms permitted to be both your auditor and your consultant because too often these two interests are in conflict with one another. Isn't that fair to point out?
It is, and that's what I'm a fan of Dodd-Frank as well, because Dodd-Frank went further and said that you can't have the same pay the rating agencies to give you a AAA rating. If Dodd-Frank had been law at the time of 07, I'm quite confident we wouldn't be in the recession we're in right now, because you had Moody's and Standard & Poor's rating all these mortgage-backed securities as AAA when really they were junk because they were paid to do so. I'm for separating all these things, accounting, ratings agencies. Basically, people shouldn't be paid to give an independent analysis of anything because it's no longer independent.
Well, this is another case in which so often the good is used as camouflage for the bad, and that's unfortunate, where the bad parasitize off what might be otherwise admirable from the good. You were essentially trying to use something I agreed with you on for Sarbanes-Oxley as a way to go ahead and give greater props to Dodd-Frank. The big problem with Dodd-Frank is that it never bothered holding accountable Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who were arguably the greatest incentivizer to all the mistakes made, because they essentially enabled banks to hang all that bad paper for people who really couldn't afford what they were being purchasing. And in part, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were motivated to do so by Congress from members of both sides of the aisle because of the Community Reinvestment Act. And at one point or another, people have got to be brought into greater accountability. And the idea that Dodd-Frank would be written as a way to overhaul the very problem from which we're trying to extricate ourselves, but not bother to include the key impetus behind all the trouble, is to me inexcusable. And in part, it's not too surprising to find out that Dodd was the highest recipient of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac dollars over anybody else, except who? In number two, the number two position? Barack Obama. Isn't that a flipper?
I'll tell you this, Alan. What you're saying, in fact, it just sounds to me, is you like Sarbanes-Oxley, you like Dodd-Frank, but you wish there was more regulation. I agree with you. I wish
there was more smart regulation and less dumb regulation. How's that? I wish there was more smart regulation and less dumb regulation, and Dodd-Frank was dumb. It epitomizes cerebral maladroitness on every level. The idea that they would leave out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac largely marginalizes what would have otherwise been potentially a more effective piece of legislation.
Alan, Sarbanes-Oxley left out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and you may recall that Barney Frank actually tried to regulate Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It was prevented by the Republicans back in 07. Look, they were not...
You are out of your mind. You are literally out of your mind. I have played on this show multiple occasions, including for you, Barney Frank being caught red-handed defending Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac after investigations were already exposing everything going wrong with them. He has even admitted that he was slow on the uptake. That's as far as he'll ever go with it. But everybody heard those videos, they've seen those videos. Everybody listens to this show knows that Barney Frank objected to regulation for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Objected to it wholeheartedly. Wholeheartedly. On record, I don't have them all right now, but my audience has heard Barney Frank along with Maxine Waters. Arthur Davis from what? Arkansas. Congressman Arthur Davis was on my show. He was one of those 4-5 in 05 who denied that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac needed its comeuppance. And you know what he said on my show? He says, Alan, I was wrong. Okay, Barney Frank was wrong. Maxine Waters was wrong. Congressman Mikus was wrong. Alan, I'm admitting I'm a Democrat, and I admit that I was wrong in protecting Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I only wish my fellow Democrats could also admit the same. Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, you'll find that one of the first things Barney Frank did as chairman of the Financial Services Committee back in 07 was get a bill out of his committee to regulate Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, passed by the Democratic House, denied by the Republicans in the Senate who filibustered. Now, that's just a fact.
Because it was weak regulation, and you know that. It's bad faith. It's bad faith argument. Because somebody puts forward legislation, they're forwarding the kind of constructive legislation that he thought was not necessary.
It was very destructive. Secondly, it's very important for people
fig leaf,
to understand that Fannie Mae
fig leaf legislation.
Mac.
Everybody knows it. You know what? You are one of the very, very few Democrats, and I have some hardcore lefties on my show. You're about one of the very, very few who still defend Barney Frank and Bob Weiner, for God's sakes. The guy was formerly in the White House.
I know
former communications director for General Barry McCaffrey, very good friends with Hillary Clinton. This guy is so far immersed in the Democratic Party, it's amazing. Even he is on record as saying Barney Frank was wrong to defend Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac when he did. And the fact that he...
Okay. Real quick.
That's exactly.
All right, what you're saying is Sarbanes-Oxley is good, Dodd-Frank is good, you want to rate and regulate Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac too. I agree, Barney Frank agrees, the Republicans stopped it.
And you can have severability in all things, and you can also see when people take a peripheral observation, infer it as if it were a conclusive analysis, and then accordingly try to path as such. Trust me, everybody listening to the show, 99% of everybody on Capitol Hill with a working cardiovascular system knows for a fact that Barty Frank lied out of his ass. Mark Levine, always a blast. Thanks, Babylon. Stick with us. I'm Alan Davis.